Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
again. That's your Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson wants to know tonight. And I am so ready for the message. Hello, family. I am Celeste Morgan. And it states in one of the holy texts that where there is no vision, the people perish. We started off the night with In the Land of I Am by Ricky Byers Beckwith. You can find her music at rickybb.com or agapelive.com. It is my pleasure to let you know that Rev D, which we affectionately call her, brings spiritual tools you can use to upgrade your understanding of spiritual qualities and how you can apply it in the most challenging of situations. Tonight, her attention is on vision. So make sure you call in with your questions and comments as together, she promises, we will explore spiritual qualities and learn practical tools that can unleash our spiritual power. The call-in number is 347-426-3346. And don't forget to press 1 on your keypad to add your voice to this conversation. Welcome Rev D as she shares her own unique take on vision. And now, without further ado, please welcome our host of Living in the Yes, Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. Hello, Rev D. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Celeste. How are you?
I'm flying. My baby sister is listening to you tonight. So
it's
a family affair.
Oh, great. Where is she listening?
She's listening from North Carolina. Baby sis,
right.
I call her.
Very good. Well, welcome, everybody, for wherever you are. One of my spiritual mentors, the most reverend Brother Ishmael Tete out of the Assyrian Mission in Ghana, always says good morning in his British accent, no matter what time of day it is. He always says good morning because something is always birthing itself anew. So good day to you and good morning. Our topic today is on vision. And, yes, vision is extremely, extremely important. And I want to share a little bit about some nuances. There is a lot of overlap between what we call the humanistic movement or the human growth and potential movement, the spirituality movement. Some aspects of it is sometimes referred to as the New Age movement. And what I find is that all using some of the same words, and there are words that have secular meanings that have very different meanings in the spiritual world. For example, the word surrender. You know, in our common English vernacular, surrender means defeat. Nobody wants to be defeated. However, in the spiritual world, the term surrender has a very different definition. Surrender is not defeat. Surrender is releasing of the struggle because there is no fight. It's very different than feeling like you're in a fight and you've lost the fight to realizing that. So in that same way, there's a manner in which the word vision has come to mean an outpicturing of our deepest heart's intent, of our own ideas and things that we want to do or we want to accomplish. We're often told to have a vision, and if we want that vision to manifest, to start putting all kinds of texture to it, give it images, give it sights, give it sounds. The more that we can get a concreteness to it, the quicker it is to materialize. And to a certain extent, that is indeed true, that the more we have an idea in our mind, and really hold to that idea and reinforce that idea, the more likely that particular idea is to come into manifestation. That's more of the psychological, humanistic approach. I'm here talking about spiritual principles, and the concept of vision is transcendent of that. In the spiritual world, a vision is not your idea of anything. Spiritual world, a vision is that glimpse that you get of awareness, of truth, of insight, enlightenment, that is actually transcendent of all of the facts that are around. It resonates on a higher plane and a higher vibration than just the conditions and the circumstances that you are now experiencing. When you tap into vision from a spiritual standpoint, we are tapping into that God presence, the Holy Spirit, the divine, the great is, the I am, whatever name that you want to call it. When we start to get that kind of a vision, it's not with our natural eyesight. That kind of vision comes with our third eye. I want you to breathe that in, our third eye. Our third eye is like X-ray vision. Our third eye sees beyond what the naked eye can see. I say it's like X-ray vision because your spiritual vision can actually pierce through things. It can see what's on the other side. You know, like Superman used to be able to see through the wall or see for miles and miles away what the naked eye wouldn't see. Well, that's what vision does for us. It enables us to perceive. Breathe that in. Physically see. And to perceive are not necessarily the same thing. There's much that we can perceive that we do not physically see. And conversely, there's a lot that we physically focus on, that we see with our natural eyesight, that we allow to eclipse what we otherwise might be able to perceive. In those moments, the world is too much with us. In order for us to have a spiritual vision, we have to rise above. In order for us to have real vision, we can't be too attached to preconceived ideas about the way that we think that things ought to be. In order to have real vision, we have to be willing to move to the place where we know that something is in control that's bigger than we are. It's that place where we realize that just because we are not in control, the things are not out of control. This place of vision is a place that takes us into pure possibility. Now, what happens for many of us, and I dare say most of us, these visions and glimpses of possibility that seem too real, too good to be true. We get stuck on the how. I don't know how that wonderful thing could happen. I don't know how I could really be well or healthy. I don't know how this financial situation could really be reconciled. I don't really understand or see how this relationship is ever going to mend. You know, there's all these things we don't know. I don't know how I could ever land a really good job. I don't have enough education. You know, all this blah, 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 all this mind chatter that we give ourselves. And what that mind chatter does is it sets our sights lower. It prevents us from really being able to see. But that spiritual vision is an inner vision. It's not worried about all of the circumstances and the conditions. It pierces right through. Jesus was a good example of somebody with a tremendous amount of spiritual vision. People mistake And they think that when we talk about use your spiritual vision, that we're saying to be Pollyannish, or that we're asking you to go into some kind of big denial and to act like things aren't there. We're not asking you to act like it's not there. We're just saying don't let the facts get the last word. Don't let the facts get the last word. It's like Jesus on the boat, the story of the tempest, where he and his disciples are out on the waves. And metaphysically speaking, the disciples represent all of our faculties, all of our powers of the mind, strength and faith and love and all these kinds of things. And our spiritual faculties, the disciples are freaking out because they see the storm here, and they are particularly upset with Jesus because Jesus is asleep. They go wake him up. What's wrong with you? Don't you care that we're going to perish here? And the way the story goes, Jesus looks at them and says, why do you have such little faith? O ye of little faith. And it says, and he stands before the storm, and he rebukes it. It's a very powerful concept, to rebuke. To rebuke isn't just to chastise something. The rebuke is to call out the lie and to name it as so it cannot masquerade anymore as truth. Stand before our troubles. We need to stand before our storms and rebuke them. Say, you don't have any power here. You don't have the last word here. It says he stood before the storm, and he said, peace be still. Peace be still. Where is the peace? The peace is in the eye of the storm. Peace is in the eye of the storm. So he didn't let his vision, he didn't let what his natural eye could see, that there was a storm, fool him, not seeing the peace, into believing that the peace wasn't there. Every time that he healed somebody, it was the same technique, the sort of spiritual X-ray vision. Now, if we really think about this, how else can it be? Matter is neither created nor destroyed. It only changes form. So the health that you seek is inside of the body that appears to be sick. Just think about that for a moment. When you're sick, where is your health? Where is it? You sure can't buy it. Nobody else has it. It's not in the drugs and the medications. You can't give it to somebody else. Nobody else can take it. So where is your health when you're sick? It's in your body. It's the same relationship as the peace is to the storm. That underneath all of that is the illness. Within you is a perfect pattern of divine design that has never been upset, that has never been sick, that has never been ill. It doesn't even know any of that stuff. So what the vision allows us to do is not ignore the illness, but to look through it, to look beyond it, to maintain a vision of health that is not obscured, that is not eclipsed by the so-called illnesses and the facts that are around, and to perceive that so much. See, we perceive that which we can't even see with the naked eye. But in your heart of hearts, to pierce through that illness and to see, to perceive with your mind's eye the health and to call it forth. Peace be still. Health come forth. Like Jesus standing there before the man at the pool of Bethesda, pick up your bed and walk. Pick up your bed and walk. Telling the centurion, hey, the prayer that you've asked for, it's already done. Your servant is already healed because your faith has done it. Or the woman with the issue of blood, your faith has made you whole. I don't even care what the problems are that you came here with. I'm not even fixated on those because what I see is so much faith that the healing has already taken place. That's the vision that Jesus brought to everything. He didn't sit there and ask people about their problems. He didn't quiz them. What's going on? How long you been in that? Who did that to you? How many times have you done this before? What in your consciousness has made this come back again? Why do you think this is up? What lesson do you think is in here for you? He didn't ask all those questions. He just asked one question. Will you be whole? Will you? Can you perceive that for yourself? Can you have a vision of it that's big enough to pull you into it? Because pain pushes until vision pulls. You're coming to me now with all your pain. But what I want to know is, do you have a vision? Do you have a vision of wholeness? Do you have a vision of healing? Because if all you're doing is coming here seeking for me to get rid of some of your stuff, if that's all that you can see, I can get rid of that, but you know what? It's going to come up someplace else. That's what's going to happen. Even Jesus knew that. Even he would tell people sometimes, don't even speak of this. This healing we've had, don't even talk about it, lest you begin to feel like you have to defend it, and other people's lack of disbelief will make you stop believing in this miracle that's even happened. Keep your vision of it. Don't even share it and talk about it. Because when you think you have to defend your vision, you get pulled back to the other people's vibration. This place of vision is transcendent. Place of vision is beyond what you can see. You can't put it on a ledger. You can't do it in the checks and the balances. That's not this kind of vision. This is a transcendent vision. This is the vision that gets put on your heart. A pure possibility. Our job is not to figure out how it's going to happen, but to just believe that it can and to believe that it will. Our only responsibility is possibility consciousness. There is no baton pass. God does not give us a vision and then ask us to fulfill it. That is not what happens. In fact, the very fact that God has put it on your heart is the evidence itself that it's possible. Think about that for a moment. Glimpses and then wonder, can it be? But the very fact that you are given the glimpse is the proof that it can be. That's something. If we could walk around with that, grateful for the visions as evidence and the proof of the possibility, oh, what a difference would that make in our lives. I'm talking about vision. Vision beyond our natural eyesight. We all have it. We all have it. We just let it get eclipsed, like putting on blinders, letting the so-called facts, people, places, and things get too much in the way. Don't ignore the facts. Just don't let them have the last word. Don't give the facts the keys to the car. Why is it a fact? What are facts? Facts are things that are subject to change. Don't crystallize the facts. Don't deify the facts. Don't start with the facts as the given. They are the variable in the equation. God is the given. Let God be the starting assumption. Let in God all things are possible be the starting assumption. That if God be for me, who or what can be against me? You let these be your starting assumption, and I tell you, you'll see a vision like nothing you've ever seen before. So my co-host, before we go to our break in a few minutes, do you want to chime in here with any comments or observations?
I'm right here. I have a song on my heart from your words. And I want to share it with you before we go to break. And I know Life Coach today is like ready to jump in. Rev D, you do that thing. You know that? somebody said about you, and I hope I get this right, and I wish I could remember who said it. I know Life Coach Today will help me with who said it. But they said that you're like Bible study and you're gangster with it. You don't play. Life Coach Today, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Who said that she was gangster with it? And I was like, yeah, she is.
Yeah,
that's,
that was Carly Jackson. That was Carly Jackson.
Oh, we have to flip in a little bit of her voice so Rev D can connect with it at some point in the show. Yeah,
well, Carly Jackson
listens.
She listens regularly, and she would text me when she's listening. She's saying, oh, my God, I love her. She's so gangster. Yes.
And we mean it in a beautiful, powerful way, you know. It's all right to be gangster for God. You know, it's a powerful thing. It's all right. It's all right. But I want to share this with you because it's a song that's really close to my heart. My oldest brother transitioned in 2000. And there was a song that was sung at his funeral, and from your words and from Jesus in the boat when Jesus was sleeping, we were like, don't you care about us? We're about to get destroyed up in here. Where is your faith? And one of the songs that has helped me through from the year of 2000 is I Told the Storm by Greg O'Quinn, which is, even though your winds blow, I want you to know you cause me no alarm because I'm safe arms. Even though your rain falls, I can still make this call. Let there be peace. Now I can say, go away. I command you to move today. Because of faith, I have a brand new day. The sun will shine, and I will be okay. And that's what I told the storm. I could hear that song all in my body as you were speaking.
Amen. What's the name of that song? I haven't heard it.
It's called I Told the Storm. I will post it everywhere. Greg O'Quinn. And it is so powerful. And when I forget, because I'm human, and you told me last week that all I had to do was show up, God got it.
Yes.
And when you told me that, it freed me. And there's more freeing that's happened from last week's show, which brought forth I Told the Storm that's showing up in my life, whether it's showing up as Ferguson, whether it's showing up as what's going on in Israel, whether it's showing up as what is going on, can you pull your pants up when you're trying to loot? I mean, I'm not trying to take it. I'm just saying I told the storm, and I'm telling the storm in my life, even towards the energy of forgiveness. I don't need to take any more hostages, and that's what I'm learning about living in the yes, is all I'm trying to say to you.
I love it.
Life Coach Today, do you have anything else, or do you think we need some water?
Well, you're going to do the break. Well, you're going to do some announcements anyway, and then after that, because Vivid D is on fire. I felt that. Oozing out of her.
Oozing.
Yes.
Mhm. I feel like I got backup in the schoolyard. I never felt like I had backup in the schoolyard. I felt like I was always by myself. But with Life Conversations Radio and Living in the Yes with Deborah L. Johnson, Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson, Rev D, we affectionately call her, I just feel so empowered. So my enthusiasm is just from a place of feeling free.
Well, I feel it. I mean, it was like an old Pentecostal preacher was coming out in me.
We love it. Well, then I guess I'll take this time to let them know about how they can learn more about you and we'll continue the conversation. Family, I want you to know that this is not a one-sided dialogue. You are welcome to join in. You can call in 347-426-3346. Don't forget to press 1 on your keypad. You have our Rev D at your disposal. If there's a storm that you need to talk to today, that you're not even sure about which way to go, the winds are blowing, press 1, especially if you're already on the phone line. And if you're just listening from outer space, 347-426-3346, press 1 on your keypad, and we will come over to you, and you can have a dialogue. You can tap into this magic, too. So with that, I'm going to let them know about more stuff you're offering, Rev D, because you're a really busy woman, and you're doing so many amazing things. And though you're with us on Tuesday nights from 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, there are other places where people can get to you, and I'm going to tell them about that right now, if that's all right. Very great. So you need a summer tune-up? You can join Rev D for your spiritual toolkit, discover, dust off, and demonstrate your tools. I think the last Wednesday, which is coming up tomorrow from 7 to 9:30 p.m., you can go to Inner Light Center, attend any or all new to your spiritual journey or a seasoned traveler. You can tap into the spiritual toolkit. Last one appears to be tomorrow night. Stay engaged and be uplifted with fun and interactive exercises. And to find out more about what's coming up, including having one-on-one time with Rev D this summer, you can check out innerlightministries.com. Also, don't miss Living from the Inside Out. It's a spiritual retreat featuring Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith and Ricky Byers Beckwith. Reverend Deborah will be the guest speaker for Sunday service, hosted by Heart Space Teachings. Register now. The space is limited. This event takes place from August 21st through August 24th, 2014. For more information, go to heartspaceteachings.com/retreat. And I will make sure that I post that in the chat room so you guys can get that information. And as always, the invitation is open to you to join the conversation. Share what's bubbling up for you. Call 347-426-3346. And don't forget to press 1 on your keypad. And now we're going to return to our continuing conversation about vision with Rev D. Welcome back, Rev D.
My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to go check the phone lines and see what's brewing.
Yes.
So, my brother, I know you have something to say.
Well, I do. And, you know, As I listen to you, I just feel full. And I am an observer of life, of humanity, and what goes on in the world, and I know you are that too. And so what I want to ask you, I'm sure you probably can sense the question already, is when we talk about vision, you know, seeing beyond what the naked eye can't see, you talk about rebuking the trouble and looking through and knowing that, just starting from the assumption that with God all things are possible. There are a lot of people that believe that right now, and there's so much going on in the world. Of course, there's the conversation story about Ferguson, Missouri, where a young man was shot by a police officer and people are protesting, and there's so much going on. And I've seen even people, what I would say, in the spiritual community, for lack of a better term to describe it, are struggling with what they're experiencing. Mothers are feeling like they're afraid for their sons. And I just want to ask you on behalf, and just maybe deeper, but just people who are saying, I hear this vision thing, but how do we apply it here when it looks like the Lord doesn't respect us? This has been going on forever, or and our black men are in trouble. How would you share with them? What would you share with them to start really seeing that, starting with the assumption that with God all things are possible, not just words. It's a spiritual truth that transforms.
I am about to say something that may just get me in trouble.
Go ahead.
I can kind of feel like Malcolm X did in his comment about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, the chickens have come home to roost.
Mm.
And it created quite a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad disemboweled him from the Nation of Islam and all the rest of that. So maybe I'll temper what I'm about to say just a little bit.
Yes. Hey.
But you just said the police are killing our young black men. But do you know who's killing our young black men the most? Other young black men. The number one cause of death for young black men, 15 to 25, is being killed by another young black man. Now we got to let that sink a little bit. Okay? We have so much internalized oppression. I don't know who's acting like who.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether the police are treating us the way we treat our own selves, or whether we have sunk so low that we're treating ourselves the way that the racist establishment treats us. There's obviously some mirroring going on. That, yeah, we really got to do something about the police department. Yes, we do. But the place that we have to start first is some vision. As a black community, we have to have a vision of our young black men as sacred and as whole. What are we doing for our young black men? What opportunities are we giving them to belong in community and to have a sense of rites of passage into manhood besides being in a gang? You know, what are we doing to make sure that they can get jobs? What are we doing to make sure that they can get into college? What are we making sure that they can read? In the state of California, third grade test scores are the predictors of how many prisons we're going to need 15 years from now.
Hmm.
We'll pay $65,000 a year to keep a black man locked up, but won't pay 10% of that to educate him as a child.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's some real stuff that we need to do in terms of the police. And all of that. But if we're talking about vision, and I'm not just talking about the vision of our black men as victims of a police state. Where is the vision of our black men as holy, as sacred, as strong, as viable, as intelligent and artistic? And creative, and legitimately wealthy, and successful. Where's that vision? Are we putting that forth in our movies? Are we putting that forth in our songs, and our music, and our imagery? Is that what we're putting forth? See, you got to back a vision up. I want everybody to hear me. You got to back it up. Okay? I'm not saying that it's on your back to fulfill all of your visions, but you can't act contrary to it. See, if you have a vision of yourself as sober, you're not going to get sober on your own. That ain't happening. Okay? You're going to need some help somewhere. You're going to need to rely on God or AA or something somewhere. Okay? So it's not on your back exclusively to make you sober. But at the same time, you can't do the things that are contrary to sobriety. You can't have a vision of sobriety hanging out at the bars. You can't have a vision of sobriety, you know, time went over. You know, drinking every night, that's not going to get you there. And unfortunately, that's where I find our community too often. We say that we, you know, want to stop the police brutality and all this and that, but then we glorify in our own community violence against each other. You can't have it both ways. You know, quiet is kept. That's the issue that I have with the right to lifers. It's like, what's up? Roe v. Wade is in trouble. So what is their answer? If you really don't want women to get abortions, if that's what you don't want, what are you doing for them? What are you doing to make sure that these women can have these babies? Because most women and couples don't want the children because of economic reasons. It's actually married women who are the ones who are getting the most. Abortion's not women that are just like running around trying to, you know, like being unsafe with their sex, you know, sex life or whatnot. Like, if you really want these babies born, what is your vision for them? What are you doing? Are you making it easier for people to get adoption? Making sure that these women have prenatal care? You know, are you making sure there's early childhood education and paternity leaves and that these women can make it if they have these children? You know, you can't have a vision of something and then work against it. Or then it's not a true vision. So if we want a vision about the police and what they're doing to our young black men, it's going to have to start with us. Yeah, we need to work with the police department, and that ain't no lie. The amount of racism that's happening in our justice system is just off the chart. But in terms of vision, it's going to have to start with us. We have to value the men in our community. I grew up in Los Angeles, and just a few blocks from my house is one of the biggest Pentecostal churches in the world. It's called West Angeles. Bishop Blake is the pastor there, and he's head of the whole Church of God in Christ, which is the largest black Pentecostal denomination in the movement. And he has a marquee up on top of the original church. They have since built another big one. And he has a lot of stars that go to his church, like Magic Johnson and Denzel Washington and Debbie Allen and a lot of these kind of folks. They built this huge, I think it's like 8,000-seater or something like that, you know, new cathedral. But above the old one, where like their marquees are, on one side it has this nice little nuclear family. You know, the husband and the wife, and I think it's two or three kids, and they're all in their Sunday duds, and it's, you know, like this invitation to go to church. And on the other side, it's a picture of a funeral and a coffin being carried down the steps of the church. And the caption reads, "Will it take six strong men to get you back to church?"
Ugh.
That's the Marquee on Crenshaw Boulevard in Los Angeles above Wes Angeles Church. And every time I see that, I just think, my God. My God. What are we saying? I appreciate what he's trying to do. You know, this is nothing against Blake, you know, as a human being or anything. I mean, my God, what they do for the black community is just incredible. But I'm talking about a vision and of ourselves. What are we doing with our young black men? The reason why I'm saying it this way, because I have a theory. And my theory is that you really can't ask of other people stuff you aren't doing yourself.
Yes.
That you can't ask people to respect stuff that you disrespect. Because we teach people how to treat us. You know, when you're in somebody's neighborhood where it's clean, you think twice before you throw that trash down. You know you're in somebody's house. You know which house to look for a coaster before you put the glass down.
Yes.
You know, because you can look around and see how they live, the rules are. What are we teaching people about the value of the lives of our black men, or our women for that matter? What are we teaching them about how sacred and holy a sister is, a black woman is? How much dignity and respect she should be treated with? What's our vision? See? King had no idea. When he put forth the I Had a Dream, he knew how that was going to happen. He wasn't going to try to make it happen by himself. But he articulated a vision. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He articulated a possibility, those seeds. And that's what we have to do with our lives. We don't know how everything's going to happen. But we got to put forth a vision of, hey, I'm successful. You know, my family is whole. My body temple is healthy. I'm financially sound and stable. You know, I'm clean and sober. You know, I'm reconciled with my life and my family. And the whole universe. The whole universe conspires to fulfill our visions, for better or for worse. Whatever vision you hold, the universe says yes. Turn this around, there's going to be blood in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from L.A. People talk about the South, but you want the litmus test for race relations? It's L.A. We're the ones that always go up in flames. And it's summertime and it's hot. Folks are plenty pissed. But if we don't come forth with a transcendent vision of who we are as a people to rise above a greater calling, you become what you don't forgive. We'll be in the streets acting like that officer.
Right.
I know I might have stepped on some toes there somewhere or another.
Well,
but I just ask everybody to think about it.
Uh-huh.
Before you toss it out, think about it.
Right.
You know, we didn't always have this problem. You know, being killed at the hand of white people in the United States, that's nothing new. Us killing each other, that's new. That's new. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to have a vision of ourselves as rising up. We used to have a vision of ourselves as free, as successful, as educated. You pulled each other up. You know, you built community. You rejoiced in each other's victories. You know? You patronized each other's businesses. You knew that the world might not have been all that just and fair, but, you know, you came to church and you sang your songs and you got your healing in the you know, healing on them hands and you know, at church you were somebody. You know, you might have been a street sweeper, but at church, oh, you were brother so-and-so, you Deacon Williams, you know, in your Sunday best and your church hat and your little gloves or whatever that was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we strove to find the dignity and the respect and to treat each other with that. Firm with one another. You were down and out. Somebody took you in. You know? We didn't have shelters. You know, they went to Section 8. We didn't have all that. We took care of each other. We had a vision of that. We had a vision of us rising up together as a free people. Pain pushes until vision pulls, and I contend that we're here now because of that vision. Because our ancestors held that vision. If all our ancestors did was get pissed at master that we were in slavery, we'd still be enslaved.
Let's lift up some issues. And I have a question as well. So I think we'll do it after the break because I know that we just need to say one word and you're there. Because after break, Celeste will share a story. But I also want a sort of continuation of what you're talking about, Reverend D, because, you know, as a social justice activist, actually, for me, you're a sacred activist. I just want to hear more from you because I just save it. I'll save it to when Celeste finishes on the other side. Celeste, you muted yourself. I don't know why.
Because there's so much fire in the house and so much that we want to express. But I will just say I had an experience, Rev D, from what you're sharing. And I was out grabbing my dinner, and I met this little boy, and he had so much fire in him, you know, and he was so beautiful, and I started to speak to him and his aunt and his uncle about what I saw in him, and it felt like for me, I don't know Mike Brown from Ferguson, Missouri, but that little kid was Mike Brown for me. And I know I grew up with that type of energy that all of us were somebody, is somebody who's going to be important. You know, I remember growing up as a kid, every adult I knew would ask me, what you want to be when you grow up and what do you want to do? And there was some of that energy coming out of me. And I saw this little boy in this restaurant, and I looked at him, and I was like, what do you play? And he's like, I play football and I play basketball. And I said, okay, great. What do you read? And he was like, huh? And I said, you know what, kid? And I said this to him, and I said, just like this. I said, you know what, kid? You're a good-looking kid. You can play basketball and you can do football, but I want you to also pay attention to your math and your reading. Because the way that you've been communicating with me all night tells me that you could grow up to be like Denzel. And he looked at me like, really? And I was like, yeah. I said, you're very handsome. And what I realized was that I had picked on the energy of the women who put that kind of energy in me and the men. And I know that for now, I mean, you got to be careful. You got to make sure that kids aren't, you know, that, you know, somebody's not trying to hurt your kid or anything. But I think there's something missing in our communities around speaking vision to people. Not what I want him to be, but had he ever considered. And I saw this light in his eyes when I said, yeah, okay, great. Do the football, do the basketball. But did anybody ever consider doing headshots for you? He goes, what are headshots? And I said, you're a handsome little kid. And he goes, I am? I'm like, yeah, you look good. You speak really clearly to me. I could see you on somebody's stage. And I hope that that's a seed that I planted, not for my own ego, but just because I really could see him acting. I could see him commanding a stage. And I think that, whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're Latino or whatever, but in 2014, I'm not feeling enough of that type of energy for our young people. And that, he moved me tonight when he asked me for some Red Bull. Like, kid, you don't need to be drinking Red Bull. I said, but that energy that you have, there's something so powerful with it. And I believe that's what the people from other generations instilled in me and instilled in other people. I don't want to lose it. So while you're talking about this energy around Ferguson and investing in our young boys and our young girls, I just wanted to offer that to the table as well.
Yes.
What we can do. And I know it's time for break. But I know that I was thinking about you when I saw that little kid, because we need to remember to, well, that's what we used to do, Resdy. I'm not making this up, right?
No, I have a comment about that when we get off a break.
Okay, good. You holding it. All right, so family, you are welcome to call in. You are listening to Living in the Yes with Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. We're talking about vision, how to give birth to it, how to not just give birth to it for ourselves, for our other generations. You're welcome to call in, 347-426-3346. Press 1 on your keypad. That's when we know how to get back to you. And we'll be right back to continue this conversation right after these brief messages.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source, a spiritual guidebook for navigating life's journey. You're listening to Life Conversations Radio.
Ready to live in the yes? Join me, Rev D, the Reverend Dr. Deborah Johnson, here Tuesday evenings, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. Call in with your questions and comments as together we explore spiritual qualities and learn practical tools that unleash our spiritual power. We mix in some music, spoken word, readings, prophetic utterances. You want in on this? Living in the Yes, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, right here on Life Conversations Radio.
Join Lisa Iverson and Life Coach Today for Ancestral Blueprints at 12 p.m. Eastern on the last Wednesday of the month. Learn how the unacknowledged truths in your ancestral blueprints may still be influencing your life today, and how to bring awareness to the truths that want to be acknowledged. Join Lisa Iverson and Life Coach Today, 12 p.m. Eastern, every last Wednesday of the month on LifeConversationsRadio.com.
Are you ready to come out to play? To passionately love and appreciate who you are? Join me, Mombasa Sophia, on the playground of life, the play experience, every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, where we always serve a raw, delicious smorgasbord of healing the mind, the heart, and the soul into this spectacular circle of life. Are you ready? See you on the playground. Be there or be square. The Play Experience, 7 p.m. each Thursday, here on LifeConversationsRadio.com.
I'm tired of running from my life.
Hello, family. I'm Celeste Morgan, host of The Celestial Show, and I want to invite each and every one of you to join me on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern to receive divine messages through tarot, numbers, and my intuition. Break out to the other side with laughter and information you can use to get the life you truly want to live. Remember, that's every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern on LifeConversationsRadio.com. I'll see you there.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Ooh, Rev D, we left you with a lot. And I think that Life Coach Today had a question, too. And I know you wanted to respond to my last comment. I just want to let people know one more time, 347-426-3346. Don't forget to press 1 on your keypad if you want to jump into this conversation. Rev D, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Rev D, I just want to add this to it, so I'm sure because of time, you can tie it all together. If you were speaking to the people at a protest right now, as I said, as a sacred activist, and they need someone to speak to their heart, to go beyond the emotionalism and the them and us, and I know what you shared, it carries a lot of weight. But is there anything else you would add to the conversation if you're standing there talking to these people who are just feeling like what they're doing to us, and maybe some of them are not looking at what they're doing to us themselves?
If I was standing before the people right now, I think that I would say something to the effect of this is a defining moment, that as of this, there's going to be a change in history, that it is time for us to no longer settle for the crib to the prison, you know, cradle to death pipeline of a prison industrial complex that leads to the kinds of police brutality and targeting of African Americans that's currently happening. That this is symptomatic of something much larger. And that as a people, we have to say enough. this reminds me of a talk that I gave at the Essence Conference that they put on with their big music festival. It was the first year that the conference after Katrina, that New Orleans was open again. And I was saying that we have to challenge, and we know how. That when we look at every other area in society, there was a strategic way that we went about doing what I would call the diversity work. We did it in the hospitals, we did it in the military, we did it in education and everything, and that we need to stop accepting this as our fate, to figure out how to keep our young people out of prison and straight up challenge what's going on and happening in the first place and not accept it anymore. There's a way we've been complaining, but we haven't really rallied together as a community and demanded something else. It's people who make these decisions. It's clear to see in this instance that it's a person who pulled the trigger 6 times. But we tend to take these prison industrial complex and criminal justice system and all, as like this big amorphous something that we can't do. They're people. They're people. They're people who make the decisions. And I have yet to have seen, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but as a movement, I have yet to have seen a real concerted effort to change the mind, to change the racist mindset in a very deliberate, strategic way, the same way that we have done about everything else that we have ever made any movement on. It's as though there's a place in our heads where we are arrested when it comes to the criminal justice, where we just accept it as our lot. We don't accept it anywhere else. We don't. Why are we accepting it here? And I think this is a defining moment. I wouldn't say this to them at the rally, but with us here right now, I think this young man, Michael Brown, I think he's going to become the Emmett Till of this early 21st century.
You don't think it will be another Trayvon Martin where people protest and get upset and then go about their day-to-day and Chicago is doing what Chicago does and we all go back until something else happens?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I really don't. I think, and I know the show isn't about this specifically,
right,
but if the autopsy, that the independent autopsy just came out, is correct, that this young man was shot 6 times, and that the fatal shot was a shot straight through the brain, that he could only have been in a lowered position, and everybody swears that he was trying to surrender. There's things that converge to make something the moment. You know, just like John the Baptist was a precursor to Jesus. There's nothing against Trayvon, but, you know, Trayvon really heightened the awareness of something. But part of what made Emmett Till kick over was the way his family, his mother, showed his body. You know, for those of you who aren't aware, Emmett Till played a very vital role. He was killed in 1955 and in Mississippi. And he was originally from Chicago, and he was there visiting his uncle. and he was bragging and showing people in his wallet a picture that he had of a white girl in Chicago that he was claiming to be his girlfriend. And, you know, basically he's a 14. You know, he's just bragging and all that kind of stuff. And the young boys there dare him and challenge him to speak to a white woman, and he doesn't know the difference. So he goes to the store, and he tells this 21-year-old proprietor of the store, this white woman, I think he says something like, hey, baby, or you know, something like, you know, some kind of a come-on line or something like that. And he was beaten to death in the most horrific, horrific kind of way, and drowned in the river and, you know, all the rest of this kind of stuff. And the long and short of it is that when his body finally made it back home, his mother had an open casket for the whole world to see, you know, what in fact had happened to him. And the tide really turned then in terms of people's feelings about it and what happened and all of the rest of that. And everything has been building up. Everything has been building up. And I think if the family continues the way that they have continued, I think this may be our Emmett Till. That there was something about Emmett Till where the white people could no longer, what's the word I'm looking for, could no longer sit around in innocence,
mm-hmm.
kind of like the way that that television brought the Vietnam War into our living rooms in a way that, that hadn't happened before. Like this one's different. This one's kind of like on a whole nother plane here. And I, if not this exact one, it's close. That's all I can say. Is the day of this kind of blatant brutality is over. I can hear King in my head now talking about segregation. He says, the days of segregation are over. You can be certain of it. The only thing uncertain is how costly the segregationists will make the funeral. If the community rallies as community at this moment can be a defining moment. If we just take to the streets and riot and let out our frustrations, we'll miss this moment. But if we pull together in a nonviolent way and demand some accountability on the part of the Justice Department and Police Department, this could be a defining moment. But that takes vision.
Yes.
That's back to what we're talking about. And to be honest with you, I haven't heard a lot of vision.
Right.
I haven't heard us talking about what it'll be like when we get it. I haven't heard a lot of talk about what we're trying to create. There's a lot of talk about what we don't want to have anymore, what we don't want to see. But that isn't what makes things turn. The vision is not just about what you don't want to have.
Right.
The vision is a picture about where you're going, even if you don't know how to get there. You know, when King said, you know, the little black girl, the little black kids and white kids are going to, you know, go hand in hand at school together, whatever. Baby, that was due notice. We're going, oh, what a nice little dream. That was heretical.
Mm-hmm.
That was noticed. to all the white people, y'all going to have to get over it. No, I'm not going to kill you. I'm not going to try to hurt you and harm you. Your kid, my kid, we're going to go to school together. That's what's going to happen here. Get used to it. It's that kind of vision we have to put forth. No, we're not trying to kill the police department. You know, no, we're not trying to do that. But let me tell you what's going to happen here. Black men are going to be able to walk around safe and not have to fear that their lives are going to be cut short by the police. That's what's going to happen here. And it's brewing. I was student body president in 1971 to 1972 of my high school. That particular year, 18-year-olds got the right to vote because there had been so much protest about Vietnam, and it shouldn't be fair that people should be drafted and they can't even vote on whether they want this doggone thing or not, or who gets to say, you know, whether we're in it or not. There was a woman, she was she'd been a council rep, and then she became higher up in our state legislature. Her name was Yvonne Brathwaite Burke. And I remember I brought her in, and we did four assemblies. And we did these assemblies primarily to the seniors who are now 18 and trying to explain to them, you're not a kid anymore. You're not a kid. Once you hit 18, it's different. And I never will forget these words that she said. She said, if you're pulled over or whatever, basically just shut up. Cooperate. And here's what she said. She says, because in that moment, that officer is the judge, the jury, and the executioner. Your side of the story will never be told.
Wow.
Okay. And that was almost 45 years ago. Been a couple of generations. And I'm old enough now to see how history goes. Like, stuff's been percolating for a long time now around this police stuff. And it's peaking here now. And if we rally with a vision, we can make a big change. The moment is now.
The perspective that you bring to us, if we can create and based on your schedule, later on, I know the next few weeks it's not going to work, but I really want to have a detailed conversation on social justice, because I'm sure listeners can agree with me here and people who know you. We don't hear a lot of voices like yours when it comes to social justice. And I think the mainstream media sensationalizes violence. And all of us, it's like, oh, breaking news, what happened? I mean, I've seen some things on Facebook right now, and it's just like, oh, you focus on the wrong thing. And I would like for us to have a little bit more space to really talk about what that looks like and how people can actually start to make a difference. Because I think some people are just numbed from being able to think. And what might seem so simple might seem so challenging, but I would really love that opportunity if we can work that out with your schedule later on in the weeks, maybe, I don't know, September, October or something.
Can you imagine for a moment? Can you imagine if just 1 or 2% of all African Americans, just 1 or 2, let alone like 5%, can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
If in all their respective cities and towns and whatnot, they all just wrote letters. Letters to the editors, op-eds in the newspapers. It doesn't even have to be a lot of words. A paragraph, two paragraphs. I have a 14-year-old son. I have an 18-year-old grandson. I have a 16-year-old nephew. And you know what? He's a good God. He deserves to live. He does this and that. He carries the groceries in. He sings in the choir. He plays on the basketball team. He deserves to live. Can you imagine if there was just a whole "he deserves to live" campaign? Can you imagine that? It's just thousands of people just started saying that, making it viral. You know, one person could do a little selfie. One mother could do a little selfie. And that sucker could get a million hits just right. being passed around. Amen, amen, amen. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And change a whole conversation with a vision. Not just, what are we going to do about these cops that keep killing our kids? But a vision. Our boys deserve to live. It can happen. With technology and media this day, you can start all kind of stuff. It can start with one letter that one person writes, like a chain letter, and says, "Hey, send this to 10 and add something." Within a week, you could have a conversation happening all over the nation about our boys, our girls deserve to live. Wouldn't that change the vibration and the energy?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
It works. I watch the LGBT community. I've been very involved with it. I know the stuff we've done. The It Gets Better campaign, a message to gay youth, don't commit suicide. Gay youth commit suicide 3 times the national average rate. You don't have to commit suicide. It Gets Better got to be so big, Obama. If you YouTube Obama, has an It Gets Better.
Yes, I remember that.
Celebrities, all kind of people started taking place in that. That's a vision. I'm not saying we're not hurt, but change doesn't happen without a vision. Didn't you quote that, Celeste? Didn't you start to show off with that?
Mm-hmm.
Without vision, the people will perish.
There you go. Whether it's at the hands of another or at the hands of yourself. Without vision, the people will perish.
I'm hearing that differently right now. hearing that differently right now. Whew. Yeah.
And, you know, if I gave you this other comment that I have in my heart, it's going to be a whole other show. Next week, you're coming in with surrender. But what I'm holding for you tonight, I will promise to send you.
Okay.
Particularly about our LGBT teens. It works. The methods with division and transformative action, which is the theme for the month of August for Life Conversations Radio. You're always right on time, Rev D, and we thank you. We thank you. There are people on phone lines. There are numbers on this thing that I don't even know, Rev D. Brand new listeners, beautiful regular listeners who are chiming in the chat room. I want to thank them for their presence and their energy, and I definitely want to thank you for serving it up. Gangsta style, a la Carly Jackson said. It's powerful. It really is.
It really is a pleasure, and I'm so glad that in this show you give it a chance to apply these principles on a macro level, a collective level, in addition to an individual one.
I know, that's right. Underneath us, Rev D, in honor of you, we have one of your favorite singers, Jamie Lula. Love is my religion.
Very good.
I'm about to cry. Let me stop. I don't want you to go. But listen, you don't have to miss
the
fun on Tuesday night. Thank you, Rev D. Next Tuesday night, she'll be back, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to release into the night a vision of Love is My Religion. I also want to let you know that don't miss Mbasa Safari at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursday on the Play Experience. You got me, the Celestial Show with Celeste Morgan, at 8 p.m. Eastern every Sunday. Make sure you come back next Tuesday because Rev D is going to talk to us about surrender. Have a wonderful night, family. We love you. We'll see you next week. Peace and blessings, and keep the vision. Go ahead, Life Coach Jay.
The light of your light, love is my choice, love is my decision, love is my voice, love is my religion, love is my religion.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.